Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the Train Happy podcast. My name is Tally Rye and today I am joined by a fellow personal trainer, Laura Ghiassi, and we are having such a great chat. Laura has had her own journey of ditching diet culture, leaving it behind, and really discovering an intuitive approach to food and exercise. We get into it in the conversation, but Laura had been on some form of diet since she was about 8 years old, and we really chat about the evolution of that and, you know, how she got to where she is today. So I really hope you enjoy hearing from Laura, because she is an awesome trainer and content creator who is doing some amazing work. But before we get into that, it is of course time for Train Happy Trooper of the Week. This week's Train Happy Trooper is listener Megan, and Megan says, "My train happy moment is that recently I have started trading in my usual sweaty cardio for a slower paced Pilates or a bar workout, and I am loving it. I enjoy working out so much more for listening to my body and taking a slower pace and enjoying every minute of my workout instead of powering through. Thank you for giving me the tools to listen to my body and respect my own boundaries." I really, really love this, and we get into this in today's episode of how we did so many things in diet culture and we did what we thought we should do rather than necessarily what we wanted to do. And actually what you want to do and what you enjoy can actually be quite different and can be, you know, a lot more gentler to the body. So if you would like to have your train happy moment featured and be Train Happy Trooper of the Week, you know what to do. Email us trainhappypodcast@gmail.com, or you can direct message us on Instagram and we will pick it up there. And of course, make sure you're following us on Instagram as well. We love to keep sharing more podcast content with you over on that page. Right, let's get into my conversation with Laura. Laura, welcome to the Train Happy podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. This is quite the honor. Thank you.
I'm really excited to speak to you because I have just loved seeing you flourish and thrive on TikTok and seeing you just kind of, I don't know, just be so brave and bold as to really just stick up for what you believe in on that platform in a multitude of things. Like, we'll definitely get into like all the fitness stuff, but just on so many issues. And I'm just loving your work, to be honest.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I think I live in a bit of a bubble where I think I'm like, well, this is just, you know, fact, or, you know, not fact, but, you know, I just think this is what this is. And then somebody, you know, TikTokers will definitely tell you if you're wrong. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I want to get into, like, maybe later on we'll like just talk about TikTok even more, but I'm just so fascinated with that platform. Like, I love it. It sucks too much of my time away from me every day. But also the fact that unlike Instagram, where you do get a real sense of community, because lots of communities have been cultivated for years. And I know in my case, it's something I've been doing for like, it's like 8-9 years now. And on TikTok, because you're so exposed to people who've never come across your content before, just by scrolling on your For You page, you just get people who are like, will say exactly what they're thinking, don't care about your feelings, don't care about anything. They just see everything at face value. And so you just get One of the best things about TikTok, so for people who haven't been on there, the comment section is often comedy gold. Like, it's the best thing about it. But it's also, like, brutal at times.
Yeah, it's I think there have been certain times, and we'll get into it, but there have been certain things that I've posted, and then afterwards I've been like, okay, I can't look at TikTok right now. Like, just take a step back. But there is something about it, and I don't understand the back ends of social media too much, but like, there is something about how, I don't know if content is surfaced to more people that don't follow you on TikTok, because as you say, on Instagram and other social platforms, you have a really nice, like, well, friendship group in a way. That's not to say people don't get bad comments on Instagram, but it seems like you are more susceptible to the masses on TikTok. And I don't know why that is.
Yeah, I think that's part of the attraction of it. And that's what makes it so fun, is because you are like finding all these new people in random videos. And like, if it's a good video, it's a good video. It gets shown to people. But yeah, I do think it's just so interesting. So besides putting content out on TikTok, you are also a personal trainer. You're based in the US in LA. And I would just, but you don't have an American accent for those who are, you know, astutely listening. So I'd love to hear your story of kind of how you got into fitness, how you ended up in LA and all the rest of it.
So I haven't always been a personal trainer. I've had a few careers, but the main one was I spent about 10 plus years. I worked in TV. So I was I was a production manager. I started off as a production assistant, worked my way up to, I was head of production somewhere. And it just became too toxic. To be totally honest, it was just a really cutthroat. It was a really kind of, I definitely had a bit of a burnout when it came to working in TV, and kind of a way out of that, even when I was still working in TV, was going to classes. So I would go to fitness classes, and I was a hardcore body pumper. And so then I was like, well, I'm so unhappy in TV. Why don't I consider if I could like go down a slightly fitness route? And so I did, as you know, I did like my level 2 first, which is like the gym instructor. And I was like, okay, well, that was fun. And then I was like, why didn't I become a body pump instructor? And I did that. And I was like, okay, well, then I can, if I'm enjoying this so much, why don't I just do the personal training qualification? So when I was in the UK, I kind of did both TV and personal training. And then I have a green card, which is why we're here. I got married to my better half. And then we did kind of that process, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, we have the opportunity to move to LA or move to the US. So we kind of just jacked everything in. And I say that I jacked everything in. She still works for the same company, but we were just like, let's try it. Let's move to the US. We came to LA, the hub of all things health and wellness to a degree. I use that kind of in quotation marks, actually, health and wellness, because a lot of it is not. And then when I was here, I was like, right, let's just do personal training and classes full time. And so, and just see how that sticks. I think a lot of people were like, are you going to LA to like continue working in TV? I was like, absolutely not. You couldn't pay me. But yeah, that's kind of in a nutshell how we got here.
That's so interesting that, I'd love to know how TV kind of influence maybe your own experience with food and fitness and body image and all that stuff. Like, I wonder if that was a lot of thinking like the visual, like, I don't know, did that play a role?
I think maybe I was definitely on the back end of TV. I was never on TV, but I think it was partly. And I think actually, when I think about it, you know, when it came down to casting and things like that, that's a really profound thing. I think people, maybe TV films are getting a bit better about it, but definitely like whatever I'm talking about 15 years ago, too far, 10 years ago, it was, you know, yeah, you had to, everybody was slim that's on TV. They are still to a degree, to be honest, but that played a massive role, I think. And but even further back from that, like as a kid growing up, I think it's really drummed home that a woman's primary role is to, you know, look attractive, not to get too deep and meaningful early on, but that's a big thing, is that striving to lose weight. So that all played a really big part in like what a woman should look like, sort of thing.
Yeah, it is something you learn. I was listening to another podcast today and they were talking about the Paris Hilton documentary. I'm not sure if you've seen it.
No.
It's really good. And I grew up loving The Simple Life, you know, Paris Hilton, yes. Nicole Richie, like that was yeah. my era. I always just, I love them. Like, I'm not just going to say, like, I love them. And I've always been fascinated by them. And it was just showing how when Paris Hilton was like a little girl, that her, like her parents, her grandparents were so obsessed with like her beauty. And they used to, her nickname was Star. And they used to really put her on this pedestal. And it was just really interesting that from that young age, it was driven home that her greatest value was her beauty, her looks, and how she portrayed herself. And I just thought that was so telling of obviously the kind of trajectory she went on and everything else. But that's just an example of, you know, feeling that from a young age.
I think it is, I think it's drummed home really early on to women that, you know, maybe to men too, I just can't speak on behalf of the male population, but I think from a young age, and actually I was on a slight tangent. I was actually listening to Virgie Tova talking about this. And she was saying that, you know, it's drummed home that women, I'm going to do this no justice, but that women from a young age, we're taught your primary role is to look attractive to get a man.
Yes.
And it was so fascinating to hear her talk about that. I will do it no justice, so I'll stop paraphrasing it. But it's that same thing, is that, and you know, Paris Hilton is so in the public eye that, yeah, your primary role is how you, your aesthetics. So I think that played a big part in my makeup with regards to like how I saw myself and that sort of thing. But then at the same time, I think probably I was feeling a lot of burnout in the TV industry, and you hear often that you're like, what do people say? The gym is my therapy, or that yeah. sort of kind of language that people use. And I thought, oh, well, okay, well, if the gym is, I'm told that the gym or working out is people's therapy, then I'll go to the gym or I'll do a class. I unfortunately at that time took it a little too far. But yeah, I think that's kind of where I started kind of thinking, oh, well, I'll feel better if I go and work out. That's kind of where it came from.
It's so interesting how, yeah, exercise is seen as this outlet, this, yeah, it's my distraction from all these other things. And as much as that can be really helpful, it mm-hmm. can only be a distraction to a certain point. It's like those things are always going to be there. And sometimes yeah. you just have to do the really hard work of facing them and dealing with them, right? But yeah. I'm speaking from someone who doesn't like doing that and finds that Same. Really hard. The yeah. easier option is to go for that run or go to the yeah. class and not think about the deeper thing.
Yeah, totally. And I was a big subscriber to the idea of like, what do they say, running as therapy or whatever it is. And I, for a long time, I was like, yeah, this is totally going to fix me. This body pump class is totally going to fix me. Whereas in actual fact, what I should have done is just like, gone home and like had quiet time, or you know, signed up for therapy earlier on, or whatever it was. Yeah, had a cry. Totally, I love a good cry. Actually, Same. Quite honest. But yeah, I think that was a big part of it, and it took many a year to come to the conclusion that exercise isn't actually always therapy. Well, in fact, it isn't. But I think that's also a rather privileged thing to say. But yeah, it's not the be all and end all. Let's put it that way.
Totally. And I always say that if you're just relying on one sole thing as a crutch, whatever it may be, whether it's, you know, food, I always think of like drinking, mm-hmm. exercise, always that one thing, you know, to a point it might help. And then it gets to a point where you cross the line with it and it's no longer being helpful, it's harmful. And it's always about like building in the different tools rather than solely relying on the one thing. Now, I want to kind of slightly rewind and just chat about you arriving as a personal trainer in LA. And I suppose I've got two things I want to think about. Firstly,
you are a kind of very vocal, I suppose, like anti-diet personal trainer now. You are busting the BS about diet culture online, and I'm here for it. And then you've got this like juxtaposition of living in LA, which is the land of wellness and, you know, like Gwyneth Paltrow and Goop and all the crazes and all these, the new fads, the new diets, the new trends, and a lot of these body standards all kind of, they seem to like be born in LA. So
yeah,
were you, I don't know, like, were you aware of diet culture when you arrived in LA? And then if not, what has it been like since you've kind of taken off the diet culture glasses and are, yeah, in that LA world?
When I got to LA, I think I was still in a diet culture world. I think I was just towing the line of like, for decades I had been very heavily subscribing to diet culture. And when we got to LA, I was just towing the line of like, I can't keep this up, is kind of where my head was going. Full transparency, at the time, I think I was still like, I hate myself for saying this, but like MyFitnessPal and all of that, I was still very much involved with. And then there was a very poignant day where I was like, I can't keep doing this. And I just deleted MyFitnessPal, like very randomly just got rid of it. And my better half was like, oh, this is a corner. And I was like, yep, we've turned a corner. We're not going back. And I think from then, because I felt so, felt like honestly awful for somebody that worked in health and fitness, I physically and emotionally just felt horrendous because I was under eating and all of that. So then I started to like find out, okay, what, like, there has to be another way, is what I kept thinking to myself. There has to be another way. And I actually remembered this. I tried to find it, but I couldn't. It might have been a story. I think I'm like 99.9% sure you had posted something. I think it must have been a story that said like, there are big wigs at the top of diet culture companies that are making millions off of your insecurities. And I was like, oh my goodness, I feel like crap. And somebody's actually profiting off of that. And that was a big like eye-opening moment for me. And then I was like, okay, let's dig into this. What am I missing here? And whilst this was going on, we'd landed in LA and I was trying to find a job. And I had two opportunities to work for two different gyms at the time. One was a physical therapy company and one was, I won't say their name, they're a well-known gym company, fancy gym company. And I was like, okay, I've got two options here, which one? And I went with the physical therapy company because the other one, I was like, too steeped in diet culture. Like they cared how their trainers looked and they cared like how your body is, your CV, kind of rubbish that they come up with. And so that's when just bit by bit, I started to like peel away at diet culture. And then from then I just went in kind of head first, really, in books and just making sure that I followed people online that like yourself that were talking about this, that were opening my eyes to it. And I was like, oh, there's a whole other group of people talking about how crap I feel and it's normal. And it kind of spiraled from there. So I definitely still subscribed to diet culture heavily when I came here, but then slowly but surely started to kind of see the wood for the trees.
And have you kind of felt maybe like a bit like disenchanted with certain aspects of that kind of LA life? Because like when I think of LA, I think of like green juice, smoothie bowl, go do a class, might be next to a celebrity. Yeah. Like this is how I picture it. And I think it's worth saying, like, if you don't subscribe to diet culture, you can still drink a green juice, you can still have a smoothie bowl, and you can still do a class next to a celebrity. It's just for different reasons. It's just like because it is rather than because you have to. And so I'm just curious as to like, I don't know, has there been a point where, because I do think that when you do discover diet culture, there's always this period of like, I'm so angry at this. And like, I can't believe it. I can't believe I've been like duped for this long, and I can't believe I've been like under this spell and no one told me about it, and I'm only just finding out about it. So yeah, I'm just curious what that was like for you, like in that place.
I think I when we first got here, as I said, I was still really like only protein bar, low sugar protein bars only. It was a big thing for me. And then I think I remember kind of, it suddenly dawned on me, I can't remember where, I was in a fancy, very LA supermarket I was in. I was like looking at everything and the price of everything. And I was like, my God, that like protein bar that's got no sugar, no what or not, da, 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 is so expensive. And I think then I started to like look at, not that I advocate this for anybody, but I started to look at the back of packages a bit more, and I was like, and like, for what? Like, it's not any healthier, really. I never subscribed too much to the wellness side of things. And that is a big part of LA, a big part, as you say, it's the green juice, it's the smoothies, it's the non-processed, quote unquote, side of things. And I have never been that into that. And that is something that, it's hard to dabble in, because I think people think still, the wellness side of things has done really well at distancing itself from diet culture and being like, we're not a diet. We kind of are, really. But it is something that I didn't dabble in too, or I haven't dabbled in too much. But I just started to really see everything as very fake, is how actually I started to see it. And people say that about LA, and I don't mean it actually just to LA. I mean, diet culture as a whole is what I managed to start to see, was how, you know, for example, they say guilt-free something or other. And it's like, nothing actually is, if you think of it the opposite way around, like a tub of ice cream isn't guilty, but by labeling something as guilt-free, makes out that it is, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. Like, do you know what? That's such a great point, because we subscribe this thing like, oh, you're guilty if you eat this, you're guilty if you eat that, like have this, you know, clean version, have your, you know, Halo Top ice cream instead of the actual ice cream. Mm-hmm. And by saying that there's like this, yeah, other version, whatever, you immediately like demonize the original thing without even thinking about it. And it's so interesting. Yeah.
I read a really interesting article about this only yesterday, and it was the example they gave was, the author, I can't remember his name, his brother had gone to a dentist in somewhere, I can't remember where, and the dentist said, oh, you'll be really happy to hear that I clean all of my equipment after each person that I have, each patient, and everything is sterilized. And the patient was like, but I would expect, don't sell that as a unique selling point, because I'd expect that. But it's the same thing with this. It's that, you know, oh, this is guilt-free. What does that mean then for the everything else, you know, that the ordinary ice cream or what bread, whatever it is, just by association, you then think, oh, that is guilt ridden. Because if you're saying you're not, you are guilt free, everything else is quote unquote guilty.
And a lot of it's like projection, because a lot of it is by saying this is guilt free or like, or something else is, you know, naughty or whatever. Like that's just literally someone's perspective on it rather than what it objectively is. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know, a Mars bar is a Mars bar, and it has a role for different people for various different reasons. And for some people, like, that's essential energy that day. Yeah. And, you know, for other people, it might feel like more of something like, oh, that I don't usually have this. And like, oh, this is something I don't usually have, and this tastes really good. And, you know, it can be a treat in that sense. It's so interesting, but it also can be like, oh my goodness, I know I demonized Mars bars for a very long time and couldn't go near them. Yeah. But you add that protein in there and suddenly it's back on the table. That's what's interesting about this whole thing.
The whole thing, and I think something I posted on TikTok, and again, what I sometimes do on TikTok is I sort of talk about the back of packages and I compare things, diet culture products to non-diet culture products. I don't advocate anybody look at the back of packages. That's a very deep hole that I would not encourage anybody to go into. But it is, you take a protein cookie, quote unquote, and it's high protein, which apparently now equals healthy for some reason high protein, compare it to something that isn't diet culture-y, like which one is, you know, quote unquote healthier. And I think it's just an eye-opening experience when you start to kind of peel back the big bright packaging of diet culture and think, oh, actually I don't have to eat that protein cookie that tastes like cardboard.
Yeah, and you actually feel much, I personally find, and I mean it'll be different for everyone, but I find that I'm often satisfied with like a good, like maybe like less of the quantity that diet culture would let me have, but more of the quality that I have with normal foods. And let me explain that, because I don't know if that's clear. So say like with the Halo Top thing, I would be like, whoa, this is great. I get to eat a whole tub of ice cream. But now when I have like the original ice cream, I don't want to eat the whole tub of ice cream. Like on a regular basis. I only use it like a very rare occasion. Generally, it's like I often do eat out of the tub, but I now put things back in the freezer. I never did that before when I was in diet culture. I never could just put things back in the cupboard because it was like, well, I have to eat all of it. Especially with these diet culture versions, I have to finish the whole packet because it's guilt-free. Like, you know, these are healthy brownies, so I need to eat three of them rather than just really enjoying the one good brownie that just hits the spot. And actually, you might even not even finish it because it's actually like that was just the right amount. And I've learned to find what's the right amount for me. I don't know if you've experienced that.
Oh yeah. I subscribed heavily, continuing with Halo Top. I was like, well, this is ice cream that I'm allowed, quote unquote, to have. And so I'd eat it. And what I've noticed recently is like, when I was coming out of diet culture, like, do I actually like the taste of it is what I've gone through recently. Like, do you like the taste of, I don't know what it is now, but like, oh, I had a moment the other day when we were having tacos, that was it. And previous diet culture Laura would have been like, lettuce wraps only.
Yes. Yes, yes, and yes. Now, I've done that.
Oh my goodness. And then the other day we had actual, you know, corn, whatever they're made out of, tacos, regular tacos. And I was like, what? And I felt sad for all of the wasted taco opportunities that I had. And I had instead this soggy lettuce wrap that, you know, tastes, I mean, it's fine if you prefer a lettuce wrap, 100%. But when it gets to forcing yourself to have something that diet culture told you is okay or better, quote unquote, and you don't have the version that you actually prefer. And that's kind of been eye-opening, that I'm like, oh, I actually really do like tacos. I'm not just saying that I prefer lettuce wraps when I don't.
Absolutely. When I first met Jack, I remember I made him have like lettuce burgers and all sorts and fajitas. And bless him, he just went along with it. But we really like eating bread products now.
Bread products.
I was like, this actually tastes great. Like, I didn't realize how good this stuff tasted.
My better half actually, Priya, she's good. She never says like told you so, but we had the taco moment. I was like, why does this taste so good? And she gives me this side eye. I was like, don't answer. Like, I know we've got a lot of taco making up to do.
It's really interesting, like how, I don't know, a partner, I think when they just kind of love you and want to support you, they just go with whatever you're in at that time. And it's really interesting, like in hindsight, to often reflect back and go, but were you okay with that? Like, are you sure you really wanted like the protein pancakes I made you? That was one thing where Jack was, I remember when it was like a very, very, very early on and I fed him protein pancakes. And he was like, I just can't finish them. They're disgusting. And I was like, what? These are incredible. These are like, I gave you my best work. Like, I really tried to nail it because I wanted to impress you. And yeah, he was like, I can't fake this. They're just not good.
We had that moment sad. Over some chickpea blondies. And Priya like tasted it. She was like, I was like, are they not good? She was like, they just don't like taste of much. And you know, that's because they're made with like chickpeas, sugar-free something or other. Like, and I was like, oh, and then I tasted it. I was like, that's got to go in the bin. Like, whatever, like, that's just got to go in the bin. So it's all these turning points where you And I think it's also a mental thing, actually, when you start to admit, oh, that doesn't taste as good as the real deal. Mm. And that's also a bit of a mental journey as well as like a physical one of trying to tell yourself that you prefer these things when you really, really don't.
Totally. Yeah, I do kind of, resent that diet culture like hijacked my taste buds for a bit there, you know, and now I'm only getting them back. And I'm like, oh no, this is actually what I like. Like this is what I enjoy. So you mentioned previously, and I know you've spoken about this online as well, that you have kind of had a difficult relationship with food for a long time, like for the majority of your life. I think you said online you went on your first diet at 8 years old.
Yeah. So first diet.
Yeah. I suppose. Yeah. What do you wish you could say to 8-year-old self now? You know, what do you kind of think about that?
So many things. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it's easy. Actually, that video that I put on TikTok where I say I started my first diet at 8 years old, I think what's wonderful is that so many women in the in the comments section kind of opened up as well. And I think what's easy to do, I preface that with, it's easy to blame people around us for that. And that's what people in the comments were kind of saying about people that they knew and family members or whatever. And that wasn't, I stand by, no child should start a diet at 8 years old. And in that video, I say, you know, people automatically, when you say, oh, I started my first diet at 8 years old, I think people think, oh, you must have been a big kid. And it doesn't matter whether they're a big kid or not. I did start my first diet and I didn't know it was a diet, I think. I just started writing down everything I ate. And, you know, it was a bricks and mortar MyFitnessPal basically, and I didn't know calories or anything like that. I was just writing down, you know, packet of Maltesers or whatever it was, I think at any decade it really is apparent, but you know, as we said when we started, like for women we're so based on our aesthetics that it was just what women did. You watch your weight. And I just thought, well, I'll get started early and I'll, you know, monitor my food early and I'll get a one-upmanship on everybody else that's still like playing in the playground. I'll, you know, start on this little food diary. What would I say to her? I think, oh dear, what would I say to her? I'd say that it probably like, I'd say you shouldn't be defined by how you look, but unfortunately I think everybody, women in particular, are defined by how we look. But, and so it's kind of a bigger story on how you tackle that. That sort of transpired into every diet under the sun, from, you know, everything I talked about it in that video, but like low carb, whatever, Dukan, whatever they were called at the time. And yeah, just a very unhealthy relationship with food that is normalized. I think that's probably the scariest part. And what I would say to my younger self is that that's not normal. It's common, but it's not normal for people, women, to worry about their food intake as their primary concern.
Yeah, it is interesting that for so many people, and actually this is another way that like social media in general has kind of opened my eyes to so many people's introductions and experiences with dieting and how young it does start and how prevalent it is that it will be a case of, you know, whether it's like joining a parent at a diet club meeting, like that seems really common. Like, oh yeah, mum just took me along to Weight Watchers and I went with her. And just the way you absorb that, whether it's even like explicitly said to you, you must go on a diet or not, you just absorb the information and you absorb the way that people talk to themselves around you. And you copy behaviors that you see like in caregivers. And it's really interesting. Like for you, was it a case of seeing it around you and just wanting to fit in with what everyone else was doing?
I think, and I went through a very similar thing, is that even younger than 8, you know, I was, you know, you get taken along to places your parents go to, right? And so we did go to a Weight Watchers group. I wasn't weighed or anything like that. I was allowed to play with the toys in the corner, but I remember seeing people stand on a weighing scale and their emotional state was dictated by that number on the scale. Mm. You know, 9 times out of 10, people felt very low, and that's an understatement, after they'd stepped on the scale. But, and then in stark comparison, the elation that people felt for losing a menial amount of weight, or a small amount of weight, or maybe it was a large amount of weight, but whatever, just seeing that number on the scale go down, I think seeing how happy that made people was a real eye-opener. And that was seen as something to strive for in my eyes. And it does have a real knock-on effect. And as I said, it's not anyone's fault. It's just diet culture. It is just that we as humans, I think men and women, are encouraged to get that number on the scale as low as physically and feasibly possible. But it will never be low enough is also the other thing. It's never enough. So I think that's kind of where it all started from. And just seeing that, you're right, like in the comments, people do just, in the comments of that video, people just really were like, started mine at 8, you know, started mine lower, younger than that. But it's really normalized that that's, maybe that, not that that's okay, but that there's an obsession with how we look and what we eat and that sort of thing, and how that's such a primary concern for people.
And definitely there's that thing where we need to say that it's not being anti-dieter and the choices that people make to attend those meetings or step on those scales. It's the fact that there is a culture that means, and there's a kind of a value system and the belief system, and you know, a money-making machine that means that you step on scales and you either feel bad or you feel good. Yeah. And that it's either like those two things, like you either it can make your day or break your day. And that isn't anyone's fault. That is diet culture. That is what diet culture is to be blamed for, that feeling. And sadly, people who really believe they're doing the best for themselves and the best for their children end up in these environments that, when you know better and you understand that, like, it's no environment to take a child, and you don't realize that until it's too late, for, you know, until you're older and like, oh, hang on a second, you know?
And I think to your point about the kind of, you know, it's not anti kind of, there is body autonomy here. And that's another thing that I'm like really trying to, I wrote something about it recently. It was like, you know, it's everyone's choice to do whatever they want with their body. If you want to get your ears pierced, go get your ears pierced. If you want to, you know, wear whatever you want to wear. If you want to diet, diet. But I think it too often, what I try and say with clients as well is that, you know, it is your choice what you do with your body, but all I ask is that you try, and I say try because this is definitely not easy, to come from a place of body appreciation or body neutrality at the best. Those are words I think we hear a lot, but, you know, trying to appreciate what your body can do now. You can want to change it, okay? But what can I do right now that I really appreciate for my body? And, you know, because diet culture just pushes us to think that there is this better person at the end of the rainbow. And yeah, as far in my experience, that pot of gold is very rarely there.
Or it's very short-lived.
Yes.
And,
yes,
you know, in the long term, you can't maintain that. And when you can't maintain it, you feel like a failure and like you're taking 10 steps backwards. And that's not the case. And I think, yeah, you're right. It's so seen as that pot of gold kind of feeling. And like, I felt it thinking, wow, I'm finally here. And then just the panic and stress. And, you know, the thing with getting in these diets, and I imagine saying you've done so, you know, as you've had the experience of doing so many diets, you can probably relate. There's such a high from achieving the size or the goal that you wanted. And not everyone will even achieve that. But if you do achieve that, it's like, oh my goodness, I did it. Look at me. And then it's like years later and you're thinking, okay, I can't, like, how do I get back to that? Because I can't maintain, I can't upkeep this lifestyle. And I think that's the problem for me. And I 100% have so much empathy and compassion for people who, and as you said, believe in total body autonomy to choose what you want to do with your body, but just make an informed decision and know that it's not all rainbows and sunshine. It can be really hard. And that if you're looking for a more sustainable approach and thinking long term, the less focus you put on the number on the scale and the less focus you put on the way you look, the more fulfilling what you're doing A will be, and you will feel like your mental health will probably be much better, which is like the factor of health that people just don't value as much, which is so sad.
Yeah. I think what you mentioned previously is something that it was like, you know, a lot of people put this emphasis on, well, when I'm a size X, I can wear the bikini, or I will, and this is diet culture, or I will get that raise, or I will get that promotion, or whatever it is. And now I'm able to sort of see the wood for the trees. You see it a lot more in advertising and stuff like that. There's a commercial here that, like, horrendous commercial, but basically this woman is sitting at the head of the table and is clearly the board leader or whatever she is. And she's either just done some kind of diet or something. And it's like that narrative of you will succeed once you've lost weight is just mind-boggling when you really think about it in that kind of sphere. But as you say, body autonomy, you know, we have the right to do whatever we want with our bodies. But from a mental health perspective, will you feel better in yourself? And I think it's hard to distinguish between that as well when people are so steeped in diet culture that they think, yes, I will feel better mentally and physically. Maybe you will. But it doesn't mean that you can't live life now. I mean, that sounds very woo-woo, but you can't live life currently because you're waiting for that time over there when you'll have lost a certain amount of weight or fit into a certain dress size.
Totally. You can still practice self-care. You can still celebrate yourself. You can still work on acceptance. You can still do all these things. Like, you can still like travel and go on holiday and do all the fun things you want to. I mean, maybe not in this pandemic life, but you know, soon you can do all these things and you don't have to wait. I think there's a really lovely quote, the name's completely gone from my mind, but she's a US-based plus size blogger, and she is just awesome, and has the kind of slogan of like, don't wait on your weight.
And I like that.
I love it. What's her name? Her name was Cece Alisa, and she has done a TED talk about it, about how, don't wait to be who you want to be.
Yeah.
Because life's happening right now. Life is happening right now.
And I think, you know, we all do it thanks to diet culture. They do tell, you know, everything will happen once you've lost weight or once you fit into that dress, all of that. And that's, I love that quote. I hadn't heard that before. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's, I love it. I love it too. And it's a really nice little mantra to have as well.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to talk about TikTok and this kind of generation. And I'm seeing a lot of it on TikTok as now, because what I love about Gen Z is, I say this as a 30-year-old millennial, what I love about Gen Z is obviously that they just love using humor to cope with their problems, which does provide some like really great kind of dark humor. But interestingly enough, like, I will see a lot of trends where people will say, like, there's this trend going around where you say like where your outfit's from, but then people say like, my top is from Zara, my body dysmorphia is from like my childhood and my thing that, or like, I got this necklace is from this, I have this eating disorder, it's da da da. And I can't, and I don't know if this is just because this is the kind of content I'm attracting, but I'm actually really surprised with how, obviously there's like the slight joke about it because it's like their way with dealing with the issue, but also how prevalent this stuff still is in that generation and how a lot of them I see this in the comments, and I see this in videos where a lot of people are saying, like, does anyone else's mum just eat a yogurt and then that's it, like, the whole day and stuff like that. And like, yeah, the amount of people going, oh my goodness, yes, this is me, this is my life, I can't believe we all live the same life. And you know, you'll have like 50,000 people like a comment about that. And you just, it's actually quite mind-blowing to think that this is such a common experience for people. And yeah, especially still that generation, even though we have become more accepting of body types, I think, and I do think we have making progress with certain things. But what are your thoughts on Gen Z? And do you, is your presence on TikTok partly a way of going like, I see these old patterns happening and I want to do something to just change it?
Totally. I haven't actually seen that trend on TikTok, so I need to try and find that. I try not to spend too much time on there because it can just suck
it,
time
it
away.
It really can. I'm saying this so from experience.
But I haven't seen that. I need to find that. But I think more so my presence on TikTok was more actually like some kind of self, I don't know what the word is, but like a coming of age. Like, I did this for so long, and even if it's just for myself, it's common, but it's not normal. I think and I use that term quite a lot recently, and I think it's really common for mums or, you know, old women to really restrict food intake, and then that trickles down into, you know, kids, Gen Z, those that, you know, you follow what you see. And I have seen people in the comments say, or, you know, my mom only eats this and that kind of thing. And so I think it's trying to give a different perspective that, yes, that's one way of doing things, and we are all entitled to do whatever we want to do. That's one way of doing it, but that's not the only way to do it. And, you know, for example, you don't have to only eat half a banana. You can actually eat a whole banana, and maybe you won't be hungry 45 minutes later. And that's brilliant. It's that kind of myth-busting, it's probably the wrong word, but there's just normalizing of, maybe more so trying to unnormalize disorder behavior is probably a too extreme a word, but unnormalize what's common,
I think disordered behaviors is too extreme, actually, because I actually do think disorder in general, especially in the fitness space, is so normalized. Yeah. And yeah, once again, TikTok can kind of get me out my bubble a little bit, and I do see kind of other content being made, and I'm like, okay, we've got work to do, because we're still, yeah, banging the same drum that I used to look at Pinterest on 10 years ago. So we're, yeah, still saying the same things. And, you know, I don't know if you've seen, there's like the weighted hula hoop trend and this obsession with like getting this whole like weighted hula hoop craze, which is born on TikTok, which is all about obviously doing the hula hoop to like get a smaller waist. And yeah, this is what happens when you spend a lot of time on the app, Laura. You see a lot of these things. But at the same time, it's kind of like, wow. The way my view on having a presence online in general is very much like, not to say that my way is the only way at all, but to just give a different perspective and, yeah, just put out something that may be different and may make you think twice about just solely consuming one perspective on something, or you know, only doing one way of thinking about something, because there, you know, diet culture is by far the majority.
Yeah.
Even, yeah, though when you're in like the non-diet space, you're like, oh, there's so many great people doing great things. And then you get outside of it and you're like, ah, oh, hang on a second.
Wait now.
Very much still the mainstream. Diet, yeah, culture is very much still the default.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and you're right, as we talked about at the beginning, like, you know, on Instagram, I think it's really easy, and other platforms, to make really nice little ecosystem for yourself. Like, you know, follow people like yourself and other people that say a very similar language to what I may be thinking. And then you kind of open it up to TikTok and you're like, oh, people really are still posting like very restricted what I eat in a day content, even though I'm not seeing it anymore. It's like, it's still out there. And I'm like, oh gosh. Okay. Yeah. Still got a lot of work to do here. And you know, I think in those scenarios when people are so heavily subscribed to it, they don't see anything wrong with it. You know, there's nothing wrong with Super Shredded Sally posting what she eats in a day for a certain amount of calories or whatever. I think that's really weird, actually, like that this is what I eat. Well, yeah, I don't know if you've seen the screenshot, but it's like what I eat in a day for this amount of calories. I'm like, that's really strange.
I have seen videos of people who I just know I would be if I was this age. You know, if I was like 21 again and TikTok had just come out, I would have made those videos. Yeah. And I see myself and I see the same behaviors and the same thought patterns. And it's sometimes really hard to watch because I just feel so sad. I just want to say to people, like, this level of caring about everything, every, like, you know, every morsel of food that enters your mouth, that level of attention to that is too much. Like, yeah. this is a slippery slope. And like, as a big sister, I just want to say, you know, and I have made a video on TikTok before saying like, hey, I just want to be a big sister. These what I eat and do videos are getting out of hand. Because I'm just seeing exactly what I did when it was on Instagram, where you just posted pretty photos of your food, like every day, like all the meals I ate in a day. I'd post it like breakfast, my breakfast, my lunch, my dinner, you know, even like 3 or 4 posts in a day. And now it's what I eat in a day videos on TikTok, and it just changes. Yeah. It's interesting how it's like just still going on. And we know that young women, especially teenagers and in that transitional period of your life, early 20s, are so susceptible to eating disorders. Like, that is a prime age for really forming a strained relationship with food and exercise and your body image. And so that is the target audience of TikTok right now. And so when you've got that kind of those vulnerable people making that content, consuming that content, being told by other people what they should and shouldn't do, it's a bit of a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, it's funny. It's a real minefield, I think. And when you're so young, you're so impressionable, you just think everybody's doing it, you know. And that's kind of how, you know, that sneaky little algorithm. Everybody's counting macros, for example, or you know,
all the healthy people. I just want to be healthy, and all the healthy people seem to do this, so I'm going to do what the healthy people do. That was how I got into it. I just wanted to be healthy.
Those healthy people look so happy.
Yes,
all the time. So it's really like a deceitful little, you know, whatever it is. And it's funny. I had a moment on TikTok where I used to, back in not too long ago, kind of call out individuals when I'd see them doing it. And so I think it's a really fine line. It's like, you know, diet culture is an entire industry, and it needs to be, you know, said for what it is. But it is perpetuated by the Super Shredded Sallys of this world that, you know, are posting their calorie intake, under eating every day, and normalizing that. And as you say, you just need to be the big sister to say, oh, there is another way here. Like, you don't have to do that one. It's a scary world out there.
It is. And I'm really glad there are people like you on there and just like really kind of creating a community and building that presence, because it's so needed. And, you know, I think there will be people on there who will find this message and find this, I don't know, find this approach, and it will be such a weight lifted off their shoulders. That's my hope, that they're like, oh, I can relax. Like, I don't have to be stressing about this all the time.
My brownies don't need to be made from avocado.
Yeah, or black beans. Oh, or sweet potato. You take your pick, because I've tried them all.
I did too. I tried the black bean one, and it was like, is it meant to be sweet or savory? I was like, I don't know. That's just what I saw on TikTok or like Instagram or wherever it was at the time.
Yeah, those Pinterest recipes. I've still got the Pinterest boards. I don't know why. I don't know. I just don't ever like delete anything. And I was just, it's shocking the things I pinned. I can't believe it. One of the things you talk about on TikTok, which I find really important. Like I said at the beginning, you're not afraid to just speak on issues. And one thing you're really vocal about is thin privilege and talk addressing privilege of different kinds. And yeah, I just wondered what your thoughts were on that in terms of the context of talking about diet culture, talking about, you know, the pros and cons of weight loss and you know, how diet culture impacts us. How do you kind of reason that with your own thin privilege?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, because again, it would have been somebody that I maybe saw, somebody on Instagram at some point would have posted about thin privilege, and I think I was like, oh, hold on, this is another like tip of the iceberg that I don't know anything about. And I posted something. I didn't think anything of it, but I posted something a while back on TikTok. And I had said, you know, I can preach about don't do a diet, eat a real brownie, et cetera, et cetera. But that's a message that is accepted from me, I believe, because I'm in a thin body, and you know, that's apparently deemed more socially acceptable, and quote unquote. And so I posted this, and it didn't get a lot of, like, nobody really looked at it that much or whatever. And then one girl, woman, her name is Marissa Matthews on TikTok. I can't remember her handle right now, but she is in a larger body, and she took my, well, the one, the very creative things about TikTok, she took my audio and filmed her own piece, but using my audio. The trolling she got was vile. And I'll never forget it. I'd taken a week off. We were here, and I opened TikTok one morning, and my TikTok had blown up, like, of just people commenting and tagging me and things. And I said to her, I was like, something's happened. I don't really understand what. And I watched her video. She'd done an incredible job of it. But as I said, the comments were disgusting that she'd received. And she was saying, you know, don't come for me. It was Laura that said this. And I was like, yeah, hi. Yeah, this was all on me. Why are you not coming after me and saying this? And it was just a real life example of thin privilege. And it was from then that I was like, oh no, I got to fight this fight, because so many other people are fighting this fight. And it's a privilege that I'm able to say this and not receive the hate that Marissa got. And that's just one example of it happening. But I do believe it's really easy for people in thin bodies to scream about anti-diet or, you know, health at every size. But is that same message accepted the same way from somebody in a larger body? It's just a question that I put out there, and I think it's scary the reactions that some people get.
It's the way that, you know, we could post pictures of us eating a burger and get so much praise and thank yous, and oh, thank you for like normalizing eating, say.
Yeah.
And someone in a larger body makes a burger and they eat a burger as well, and they're just equally enjoying the exact same meal.
Yep.
The comment section would be a whole different thing.
Right. And it's true. And I, you know, even down to, I said this the other day, a while ago, I posted a photo of, you know, my old jeans don't fit anymore. And I posted a photo of trying to quick these jeans up, and everyone was like, oh my goodness, thank you so much. And that's lovely to hear. But, you know, that's only acceptable to hear it if I'm still thin. And if somebody in a thin body is saying it, and you're right, the eating thing actually drives me bonkers. I posted something about I was eating a pizza, and I was like, you know, if I was in a larger body, you'd all be trolling me while I eat pizza, telling me to get a salad or whatever you think I should be doing. Again, thin privileges. Talking about thin privilege is one thing, but it's also a privilege to be able to talk about thin privilege, but not privileges, and it be accepted.
Yeah.
Because again, if I was in a larger body talking about thin privilege, it would not land the same way.
Just generally, like, who we listen to for information, who we trust as a trusted source, like who we, you know, if I say, really focus, you know, work out to feel good, and then a plus size trainer would say work out to feel good, then are you thinking about them like, oh, you're just a cop out, like you actually, like, it's because you can't be bothered to work harder. Yeah. But are you thinking that about me? And it's just that, like, I think, I hope maybe if you're listening and you're like, oh, actually, maybe I would think that, or maybe I do make those judgments. It's something that is, once again, like we're saying, how subtle diet culture can be, like, it's so just absorbed and ingrained. It's like this weight bias that we have. And, yeah. You know, therefore, there is a privilege to being in a smaller body. And it's important to acknowledge that, because, and like you are doing, using it to speak up and say that, like, the way you treat me versus the way you treat a plus size person is not okay. We should be treated the exact same. We are equals. Totally. We should be treated as equals.
Totally. 100%. And you know, as I said, 3 years ago when I moved to LA, I was still very heavily subscribed into diet culture. And so I'm also very keen to point out, I'm not the first person to be talking about this. In fact, there have been thousands of other men and women that have been talking about this. And some of them in larger bodies. Why is it only now that this is being accepted is also a question I have. And it's just an interesting thing. And it's what you had mentioned about, like, being celebrated. Oh my goodness, thank you so much for posting this. I posted something on TikTok and I put it on Instagram about, like, you know, things that should be normalized, cellulite, et cetera, et cetera. But mine is minimal. And I still have thin privilege when it comes to those things. And that's why it's celebrated. Whereas if somebody in a larger body, how would they get? I'm not saying how people would respond. I'm just asking, how would one respond to that? Because in the example that I gave with Marissa, it's not the same way. And that needs an eyebrow raised to it. It's kind of my point when it comes to thin privilege.
Yeah, there's an absolute double standard there. And it's something that we need to keep talking about, keep addressing, keep asking the questions to ourselves, as well as asking the questions to, like, people around us.
Totally.
So I want to, I just love chatting with you, Laura. I feel like we could chat for so long and go into so many avenues of this conversation. And I've just loved it. But before we go, I want to chat about your relationship with movement and just, you know, we've spoken a lot about the food stuff, but how has unlearning diet culture impacted your relationship with movement? Has it changed? You know, since you even got to LA, like, has it changed? Where are you at now?
Yes, it's changed. There's been a definite journey. I think I will preface this with, I'm not a born athlete by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think I picked up my first weight until I was 21 when I worked in TV and I did my first body pump class. Would I say that the DOMS, muscle soreness after that first body pump class, that was the worst thing I'd ever been through. But so I started very heavily subscribing to body pump and that sort of thing, as well as running. When I was in diet culture, I was like, one must run. Like, if you are not fitness, if you are not running. And then as I've kind of come out of it and actually, like, stopped tracking workouts and that sort of thing. And I, that was actually from you, because I remember you'd put, like, could you take your watch off and not track your workout? And I was like, oh, no, I can't. So I was like, I had to try and take it off. And from then, I think I sold my Apple Watch. I didn't want it back. I was like, no. So I think I did a lot of these, I don't know what you'd call them, like, quote unquote, high calorie burning workouts. I don't mean that in the literal sense, but what they're deemed as that. And then it's only now, many years later, that I'm like, I don't actually like running that much. Like, it doesn't, like, it, or I don't, those body pump classes, I actually prefer to just, like, if I just want to work my arms, then I'll just do that. Or so I still do strength training, but it's less of this very heavily prescribed kind of must work in a body pump class, must go for minimum certain amount of distance run, all of that. Definitely become a lot more enjoyable, I will say.
I'm interested in the fitness tracker thing. I think a lot of people are like, you can't take this away from me. And it's not a case of necessarily trying to take it away from people. It's just a case of going, can you work out without this? Could you have a week without your fitness tracker?
Yeah.
And what would that feel like? Like, experiment. You know, it's not saying like you could never use this again, because it will have its place, but eventually. But if you're finding that you're running up and down your stairs to make your steps and like complete your rings, it's worth taking it off for a bit.
That, between me actually doing that, when we lived in London, we were like on the first floor. If I looked at my watch at like 7:30 at night and I'm like so close to finishing one of the rings, I would like quickly do like some running up and down the stairs. Just, I mean, we'll park that back there for when I was in that phase. But yeah, I remember you'd posted like that question of, could you take the watch off? Not so much telling somebody what to do, similar with dim privileges, is posing the question. Mm-hmm. And so when you'd said like, could you work out without your tracker? And for me to feel like my exercise wasn't validated unless I'd tracked it was a real eye-opening moment, when I was like, oh, just because I didn't track it doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Doesn't mean my body didn't get the benefits. Like, yes, my body doesn't know what these stats say. My body doesn't know, like, how, you know, my body doesn't know the calories or the whatever. It just knows, it knows the you know, how it worked my muscles, and it knows how I, you know, engaged my cardiovascular system. That's what it knows. It doesn't need, you don't need to constantly quantify everything. And I think that this real trend of fitness tech in general is this, like, this constant need for data. Mm-hmm. When it's like, your body, like, your eyes can see the data, but your body doesn't, like, know.
No, and I remember saying to a few clients, they said to me like, oh, you don't have any kind of fitness watch tracker thing. And I was like, yeah, I don't track my workout. It was like, a personal trainer that doesn't track their workouts? And I was like, yeah, you know, it's like, do you close your step and close your rings every day? And I was like, no, I don't think I do.
I don't have rings.
No, there's no rings to close.
Yeah, I don't have rings.
Yeah, it's very, I think that was a big kind of detachment from diet culture for me, is that element of fitness, and that then trying to, you know, your exercise still happened even if you didn't track it. And I remember you saying actually, like, you probably enjoyed it more, like, rather than looking at how many supposed calories you burnt, which is the how accurate that is another thing, but it doesn't matter if you burn that many calories or not. Did you enjoy it? And that's actually where, you know, I'm a very much a team no burpee person, which also got a lot of hate on TikTok. But you know, not every move that quote unquote burns the most calories is actually the most enjoyable. And
well, that's the thing I have the most issue with in the way that diet culture has influenced fitness. It's that it's told us that we, the best workout is the one that burns the most calories, rather than being the one you most enjoy. And therefore we go after like trend after trend after trend, whether it's this weighted hula hoop, whether it's, you know, making sure you're doing burpees or doing a HIIT workout or, you know, whatever it is, like doing some, you know, new craze of whatever the trend is. And we just go from one thing to the next thing to the next thing, rather than going, okay, well, I'm just following the workout trends and what everyone's telling me I should be doing, rather mm-hmm. than going like, what do I want to do?
Yeah, totally. I think if I ever get the question, and it doesn't happen often, but if I ever get the question of like, what's the best workout? Like, as you know, with Train Happy, like, one you enjoy, like the one that you look forward to doing. Unlike me and London, when I used to run home from the office like in the pouring rain and hate every minute of it, you know, hey, it dreaded that. Actually now, if I'm, and that's not to say I enjoy every workout, I definitely don't, but more often than not I'm like, oh, I enjoyed that today, or like, feel good now, or whatever. And say, yes, there is no best workout. Well, there is, it's the one you enjoy.
Yeah. And on that note, I have to ask you, what has been your most recent Train Happy moment?
So now I now preface this. So after everything I've just said about running, okay, I still hate running, but I have, and I'm a solo workout person. I don't like to work out with people generally, but Priya, my wife, she's been doing couched 10K, and she was like, maybe some days you could come running with me. And initially I dragged my feet. I was like, no, don't like running, bad association, don't want to do it. And then she broke me down, and we have been running together. And it is so lovely. There are no phones. Well, she does have her phone for the app, but I don't have my phone. You know, it's like a catch up. We're not going very, it's like speed is not a thing. I'm not tracking how quick I'm going or anything like that. It has been a lovely experience of actually training with somebody and kind of getting back into running. It's really nice.
And I do think sometimes it's not even necessarily like the activity, it's just the mindset you have around the activity. And when you're doing something because you feel like you should be doing it and there's this pressure attached to it, it's a whole different experience than when it becomes like an enjoyable social thing that you're doing with your partner and you're just hanging out. And like that, it just even the way you approach it can mean that it can be like a whole different experience.
Totally. This is honestly, I as I say, I'm a solo workout person generally, but having somebody just to like chat rubbish with, like talk about like line of duty or whatever with, I've seen your stories.
We watched three series in 3 days, I won't lie.
I'm tempted to go back, if I'm honest. I'm tempted to go back to the beginning. And I was actually like, oh, if only to be tally at the beginning of line of duty.
We had the bank holiday weekend and I spent 2 solid days like on the sofa watching Line of Duty. It was great.
That I actually can think of nothing better.
Yeah, it was really good. I'm going to watch it tonight as well. I'm like already looking at the clock because it's the evening here, like thinking, oh, yes. Just make dinner. Oh. And I get to watch Line of Duty.
Amazing. Oh, I might have to go back to the beginning. It's so good.
Laura, I have loved chatting with you and we've spoken so much about TikTok. Where can people find you online?
I am on TikTok.
Funnily enough.
If you'd asked me this a couple of years ago, I would have been like, absolutely not. I'm not going on TikTok. But I am. I'm at Laura Ghiacci, which is Ghiacy. And then I am on Instagram. It's actually Laura_Ghiacci for some reason. I don't know. Apparently there might be another Laura Ghiacci somewhere on Instagram without the underscore. Who knows?
You need to fight them for the username. Like, please let me have it.
I know. Thank you so much for having me.
My absolute pleasure. I will link that for everyone in the show notes so they can find you. And yeah, just go check out Laura's pages on both Instagram and TikTok because she's such a pleasure to follow.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And that is it for this week's episode of the Train Happy Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you took something away from this episode. And if you did, please let me know by sending feedback. You can find us on Instagram at Train Happy Podcast. Or even better, it would be amazing if you could rate and review the podcast on whichever platform you're listening, as it really, really helps to support and boost the Train Happy message. And remember, if you have had a recent moment where this stuff has just started clicking for you, then share your story with us via email, trainhappypodcast@gmail.com, to become the Train Happy Trooper of the week. And if you have a burning question you would like me to answer, then please send those in too, and it may be answered in our bonus Q&A episodes. Once again, thank you for listening, and I will speak to you soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.